Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to the premiere edition of the Protector's Hour. I'm your host, Carl Delaguerra. Today is Monday, January 6th, 2020, the first Monday of the new year and the first Monday of the new decade. Welcome to the Protector's Hour, and we have a great show for you today. Our guest is Mr. Jonathan Wallace, 17 years of experience in the protective services industry and owner of a great company called Native Executive Security out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad you're here. Since today is the first episode of the Protector's Hour, let me give our listeners a little bit of an idea of how this came about. If any of you have been following me on social media, primarily Facebook, over the last few years, you've seen that I've dabbled a little bit in Blog Talk Radio. That's the platform we're bringing this to you on, and had a couple of different shows over the years. Each one of them has been a definite learning experience for me. We recorded 12 episodes of a previous show, all to do with protective services, back in 2018. And then, as you know, this show is archived. So I let those 12 episodes just sit in the archives for 2019 and checked the stats. And as of the close of 2019, we had 44,000 listeners just to those 12 archived editions that were on Blog Talk Radio. And it really proved to me the power of this medium to get out to people, and specifically fellow protectors in this industry. And with that knowledge and what we picked up over the last few years of doing these shows, the Protector's Hour was created. It's an hour show. It'll come to you once a week. And like I said, it is archived. About 30 minutes after we finish the show, you're able to go on to blogtalkradio.com/protectorshour and be able to listen in part or the entirety of this particular episode. And they stay on the Blog Talk site for eternity. So they're always there for you to listen to, reference your friends to, and enjoy at your leisure. So welcome, everybody, once again. We're really excited here at KDI about the Protector's Hour. And very excited about talking to our guest today, Mr. Jonathan Wallace. Jonathan, your home is Indianapolis, Indiana, where you own Native Executive Security. Tell us what Native Executive Security is all about.
Well, we do international executive protection, primarily focused on a couple of different areas, specializing in South Africa, Central Africa, also Middle East, Cyprus, Greece, and that's just kind of on top of what we do here in the States. When we're not doing executive protection, we do a lot of different types of training. We focus on training church security groups, doing security sessions for other companies as well. And that's basically what we do.
Great. We'll talk about church security here in just a few minutes, because that has been a highlight with the recent shooting in Texas. But you specifically, you said you do a lot of work in South Africa. And one thing that I found out reading your bio is that you are a licensed outfitter and guide for safaris in South Africa. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, that's right. My work basically founded in Africa, how I got started in this business. And so I've kept those connections over the years. And it was kind of a natural progression for me to take that role. And in bringing clientele from the States or European countries to Africa, majority of the time, probably 80% of the time, high net worth individuals, they wanted to go on some sort of a safari, either hunting or pictorial safaris. And so instead of going through a middleman to put that together, I decided to cut that out and became an outfitter for South Africa. That way I can provide both the security and the guides.
Now, I imagine the licensing there is very stringent. How was that as an American to go in there and be able to get the appropriate licensing and pass the regulations and all of this to be able to operate legally in that country? What was that like?
Well, it's kind of an interesting one. Africa is a different animal completely. I married a South African citizen. She's a Greek South African citizen, so I got residency through her, and then family friends really did a lot for me in that way. Living there for so long, it came out in the way of connections, really. And then going through that process, you really go to the outfitters themselves, or not the outfitters, but you go to the people that are in the industry inside the country, such as the hunting concessions, and you build a working relationship with them and you network with them, and they really pursue your licensing for you. They help you out so much. And then it's the outfitter, hunting concessions themselves that actually give you a license to promote their hunting concessions abroad.
Oh, okay. So you kind of had a foot in the door by having time in country there already.
Absolutely. I mean, South Africa is all about connections.
All about the network, right?
That's right.
Interesting. And what I find interesting is how you were able to integrate the safari business in with the security business. How well has that been received by your clients?
Pretty good. I think that getting them to understand the difference between just going online and booking a safari online, really getting them to understand what my company brings to the table. We're an American-based company. What I tell you is what you get. I'm the person that meets you at the airport. I act as the buffer between them and the rest of the country. I know the areas that they're not supposed to go to and where they should and what they should be charged for and what they shouldn't be charged for. And it's things like that. That's kind of where our name kind of comes from, Native Executive Security. That came about of just being a native to wherever you're at, knowing the areas, knowing the places to be and the people to talk to. We adapt ourselves to whatever area that we're working in and operating in. And so that's really where it came from.
You know, that's a great story about how the name came about. I imagine you meet a lot of people, a lot of interesting people in that line of work, that specific area, because a lot of people I know, it's on their bucket list. You know, I want to go on a safari in Africa, not necessarily to hunt, but just to see the flora and fauna and just to be out there roaming through the wilderness and looking at all the amazing wildlife. And like you said, photo journeys that go out there and things like that. That's one of those things that a lot of people want to do, you know, at least once in their life. Do you run across individuals like that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And it's interesting because they actually think that they make it a bucket list type of a thing, but it's very doable. People don't understand going through an American-based company like mine that it's extremely affordable. I mean, people go on trips to Canada, Alaska, and they'll, if it's hunting or not, I mean, they'll pay to go hunt elk in Wyoming, and they'll pay $20,000. But they don't understand for that same $20,000, you can have a 2-week trip in South Africa and have it very luxurious, and it'll cover pretty much anything that you want to do in that country. So it's very affordable, and it's, you know, safer going through an American-based company than going with a company in country.
Well, I think many people are like me. I mean, before I met you, I wouldn't even know where to start to begin to book a safari. I would probably call a travel agent and go from there. I had no idea that there was an American-based company that specialized in that, but not only looked out for the safari, but also professionally looked out for my safety and security, because I understand there is a very big security concern there in South Africa on a few different levels. Can you discuss that with us from the perspective as a security practitioner?
Yeah, it's very dynamic. There's a lot of concerns, and knowing what those concerns are is very important when you're in the country, because, you know, South Africa actually has a lot of first world amenities. I mean, they have 5-star hotels, they have casinos that would rival Las Vegas, and they have malls with Louis Vuitton stores in them. And so Americans going over to South Africa, they see all these amenities because that's the areas that I prefer to take them, but they allow complacency to kind of set in and drop their guard. They have no situational awareness when they see this types of amenities over there. And from one second to the next, that's when 10 guys can rush in with AK-47s and shoot the place up. And so knowing the different nuances and things to look for in that country and knowing how to talk to the people around you and having them all become force multipliers for you is a very big deal. And we see a lot now where it's just, it's so blatant right now. Like last time I was there, just driving down the road in the middle of Johannesburg, a cash and transit heist. They basically stick explosives on the back of the vehicle and blow the doors open. They execute the people that are driving the vehicle right in broad daylight. This is 2 p.m. They just stop traffic, conduct their business, execute all the people that are involved, and take the cash out, and they're on their way.
Sounds so like a Hollywood movie.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Wow. It's it's a sad situation. South Africa now, and it's a very beautiful country, but it is going along the route of many other African countries, such as Zimbabwe, right now. So we're still hopeful.
No, go ahead, please.
We're still hopeful. There's hope for South Africa. There's a lot of good people still there. The country's extremely beautiful. It's very plentiful in its natural resources. The government's not exploiting that as they should right now. There's a lot of attacks on farmers in the country. There's a lot of different threats from various angles. And that's why my business has done pretty good there, just knowing how to keep people safe, especially foreigners coming into the country.
Well, and in getting ready for this show, you sent me some photos of a hunting lodge that you have there. And that hunting lodge would rival any A-list place that I've seen in Colorado or Montana or any place else. You must be very happy about that property that you use.
Yes, extremely. It is beautiful. It's still in Africa. You know, it's still in the bush. You got to put up some of the critters and some of the bugs and things. But it is absolutely gorgeous. But it all adds to the experience of it.
You know, Jonathan, we hear about poachers over there. I mean, these guys with guns that are out there just taking animals out right and left. That is illegal in South Africa, isn't it?
It is very illegal. As a matter of fact, there's kind of a standing rule now that if you find poachers on your property, it is essentially a death sentence to those poachers. We've had some experiences with poachers, trying to track them down, turning them over to government agencies. It's a bad problem, and it's very organized. That's the they employ helicopters. They have personnel. There's a lot of money behind it. Mostly it would come from Middle East and the Orient countries that are organizing it, and it is I would actually go as far to say, now I don't have proof of this, but go as far to say it's state-funded, some of it. It's a very big problem.
And you would be the person to ask this too. In your opinion, does South Africa, as a government of South Africa, do they take the safety and security of their wildlife, their big game, very seriously?
I would say that they do. I would say they do, but it's mostly the property owners. It's mostly the farmers. It's mostly the people that are in charge of keeping the animals disease-free and protected. The government doesn't get too involved with that, except they post the regulations, and therefore the farmers abide by the regulations, and they kind of take matters into their own hands sometimes. Africa's Africa, but it's become an industry. It's a moneymaker. It's one of the largest money-making things to do in South Africa. So because of all that money, there's a lot more attention given to it.
Sure. No, understood. You know, Jonathan, when we get back here in just a minute, I'd like to talk to you about some of the things that you're doing here in the U.S. With your company and some of the great successes you've had here in the U.S. with your company over the last 17 years. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the premiere episode of The Protector's Hour. I'm your host, Carl Delaguerra, and with us today is Mr. Jonathan Wallace, the owner of Native Executive Security out of Indianapolis, Indiana. We just spent the last few minutes talking about his adventures and business that he has in South Africa as a licensed guide in that country, and some of the challenges both from a business perspective and a security perspective that he's had there in that country. You know, one of the things that we promise our listeners each episode, each week, we're going to talk about a specific product that we've run across out there that our team has had the opportunity to use here at KDI. And this week, our feature product is a device called the Night Lock. The Night Lock is an emergency lockdown solution, basically, a barricade device, if you will. It is featured at their website, nightlock.com. And how we found out about this is one of the churches that we provide state licensed security officers for in South Carolina had these installed throughout their entire campus. And this is a large campus. It's a school. It's a daycare center. It's a community center, the sanctuary, all of these buildings on multiple floors. They took these and they installed them. So we got to test them out real world there within the environment during training. And these are a magnificent product. Nightlock.com is where you can see these. Now, the device that we have experience with is called the Nightlock Lockdown 1. Retails on their website for $59.95. As it's marketed here, it uses the strength of the floor to withstand tremendous force and works on any outward or inward swinging door. It's just a device you pick up, drop into the slots on the door and the floor that are already drilled there, and that door isn't budging, let me tell you. Very easy to use. Anyone can use it. Would definitely recommend it for environments where there are younger children that can easily understand. Just pick this red device up, drop it into the slot. So that's the Night Lock barricade device. Again, nightlock.com is where you can find that, retailing at $59.95, so it's very reasonable, but a good product and one that has been tested and tried by those of us at KDI. Jonathan, Native Executive Security, not just an organization that operates out of South Africa, but your home base is here in the United States in Indianapolis, Indiana. Tell us a little bit more about your operations.
Well, here in central Indiana, we have a lot of great connections with other security companies, local law enforcement, churches, schools, and we kind of dabble in a lot of things as far as consulting goes with corporations on their security protocols. We also have partnered up with companies that actually train in medical training, CPR, first aid. And we offer that as well to schools and churches. And then besides that, we teach a lot of self-defense classes, self-defense in the way of firearms defense and physical self-defense as well to the general public. And then security companies will have me come in and run their security personnel through laws governing the use of deadly force. And that's kind of on the training side. Besides the clientele that we have actually providing security, we are kind of a go-to company here for Indiana and providing executive protection. We don't do a lot of static security. We've done some of it for hotels whenever the need arises in busy months, when concerts come through and things like that. We've got personnel that we call on for that, uniformed officers, basically. But executive protection is what we really have done in a lot of consulting for corporations.
Now, you mentioned church security, and I know you've been involved in church security for quite some time now. This recent shooting that everyone's familiar with that happened in Texas, head of the security group for this church, single shot, took the shooter out, took the bad guy out. That one event has seemed to really sweep the nation, and fellow colleagues of ours that I've talked to are really using that as a model, an example of what to do, because it just so happened that the church was live streaming the broadcast of that particular service, and this was all caught very clearly on film, as we've all seen on national TV. What kind of repercussions, what kind of impact has that particular incident had recently within the last few weeks on your calls for service for church security? Any heightened awareness because of that?
Absolutely. I think it was a very big wake-up call for a lot of the people that are the decision makers on getting training for their volunteer security staff, which I think is a very necessary thing that needed to happen, especially in my area. There's been some churches that have been very proactive with their security. I've trained a lot of their guys, a lot of their personnel, and but getting it into other large churches, they've just kind of relied on a uniformed vehicle outside guiding traffic, and they just call that security. And getting the people, the pastors, the board of directors of these churches to invest in their security personnel and actually have them properly trained on how to mitigate a circumstance is very important. And I think it was a very, very big wake-up call that churches need to be proactive. They are soft targets. They've always been soft targets. And I think it's time to change that. I think this scenario, it's sad what happened, but in the training that the security group had in that church and mitigating that as quickly as they did, I think was pretty impressive. And I think it's actually going to go a long way to getting more churches to realize that proper training is very, very necessary.
Well, and you know, Jonathan, it's been enough years now, and we have had enough church shootings, I mean, horrific church shootings around America, that the wake-up call, I definitely believe, is here, and we have enough evidence now to be able to build adequate programs, sufficient programs around there. But I would have to agree with you. A lot of it has to do with the administration and orders coming from the top down to direct these churches accordingly and get done what needs to be done. I know our experience at KDI with our Ecumenical Security Group, which operates in the state of South Carolina, has been very, very positive. We are definitely, absolutely, without a doubt, seeing a paradigm shift in the state of South Carolina when it comes to church security. As you're aware, they had a very bad, highly publicized shooting in Charleston, church shooting in Charleston. It had nothing to do with Sunday service. It was during a weekday and a little meeting they had down in the basement that went terribly, terribly bad. So I agree with you. Proactive is definitely the way to go when it comes to church security. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the premiere episode of the Protector's Hour. I'm your host, Carl Delaguerra. We're joined today by Mr. Jonathan Wallace, the owner of Native Executive Security out of Indianapolis, Indiana. And I am going to go ahead and open up our call-in line for anyone that would like to get on here with us, Jonathan and I, and talk about anything that has to do with protective services. That number is 563-999-3064. Again, our call-in line for the Protector's Hour for this next few minutes is 563-999-3064. That number is only good during the live episode, which we're broadcasting today, and obviously with the archive version, that would not be a good number. Jonathan, one of the things that we promised our listeners is talk a little bit on this show about current events, and I think the 300-pound elephant in the room this week is the threats against our homeland posed by Iran. There's a lot of talk about sleeper cells operating here in America. Are there sleeper cells from the Middle East operating here in the United States?
Well, in my opinion, yes. And I mean, not only in my opinion, but, you know, since 2017, the FBI has actually arrested three known sleeper cells working for Hezbollah and the Iranian government. And they are self-declared sleeper cells. So I don't really know that it's a question anymore because of what we've already found out through our intelligence agencies and the FBI. And the sleeper cells have actually stated to the FBI that they are Iranian controlled, and they don't know how many are here, but the FBI would actually say that they're probably all over the place, trained to live in plain sight. So I believe that it is a definite yes.
You know, I saw a recent statistic here in the last couple of days that said there is 7,000 individuals that came in on visas, work permits, et cetera, that are now unaccounted for and have never left the United States and are still here. That's 7,000 potential bad guys that might be here. Not saying they all are, But it definitely leaves a big question mark as to the identity and the whereabouts of individuals that may want to cause harm here in the U.S. And, you know, this kicked off. If anybody watches my is friends with me on Facebook, I just use my Facebook page for professional reasons. And so I try to keep up on all the current events there on my Facebook page, using that as a medium of communication for all of our Facebook friends. But on Saturday, January 4th, Homeland Security issued a bulletin notifying the American citizens and bringing a heightened awareness that there might be retaliation here in the United States from sleeper cells and other allied groups with Hezbollah and with Iran that might threaten our homeland. And like I've always told people, all terrorism is local. It's kind of like they say all politics is local. All terrorism is local as well. The terrorists that acted on 9/11 were members of our communities around America before they did that act. And one of the things that I noticed, and I just want to bring to light with our listeners, is the National Terrorism Advisory System, NTAS as it's called. It came about on April of 2011. It actually replaces the color code that a lot of people are familiar with, or red, green, yellow, et cetera. The National Terrorism Advisory System replaced that back in 2011, as I said. And there are three types of advisories that go out under this advisory system. The first one, the first level, the lowest level, is a bulletin, and that's what was published nationally by Homeland Security this past Saturday. The next level of advisory is what's called an elevated alert, and the next level is called an imminent alert. And let me go in here because I'd like to share with you what these mean. The bulletin describes current developments or general items regarding threats of terrorism. The elevated alert warns of a credible terrorist threat against the United States, and the imminent alert warns of a credible, specific, and impending terrorism threat against the United States. So those are those three different levels there. Now, it's big in the news when we're told there is no credible threat that is out there against the United States. However, folks, please remember that the last several terrorist incidents that have occurred here in the United States occurred when there was no credible threat on record. So credible threat just means that we don't know it's coming, or we don't see it coming. Doesn't mean that it's not coming. But it's just a warning that's out there. So that's a little bit about the National Terrorism Advisory System, the NTSA, and you know, hopefully we will continue to receive bulletins advising the American public of this. But Jonathan, I think you would agree with me when I say there's nothing more important than if you see something, say something. I mean, it's become a caveat, kind of a saying out there. But boy, does that hold true?
It sure does. That is the absolute truth.
So we'll keep our ear on what's going on with Iran, the daily developments. Like I said, I'll keep it posted on my Facebook page at Carl De La Guerra, and we'll continue to update our listeners as to where this thing goes, especially as it relates to our neighborhoods and homeland security threats, specifically from sleeper cells. I'd like to do a shout out to our fellow members of the IBSSA. That's the International Bodyguard and Security Services Association, headquartered in Budapest, Hungary. As a matter of fact, just a couple of months ago, they celebrated their 25th anniversary. So 25 years this organization's been around. Jonathan, you and I, both members of IBSSA, have been for several years now. I will tell you, folks, I have never seen or never been a part of a better global networking organization than what the IBSSA is. Anybody wants to check it out, go to IBSSA.org online and find out a little bit more about it. What's been your experiences with IBSSA? Let me ask you that, Jonathan.
Basically door opening. Door opening is what I would say. It's been great for networking, good networking, not just, you know, here in the States, but internationally. Their representatives all over all over the world, even down in South Africa. You know, I've ran into IBSSA members down there. The sharing of intelligence across the world and the perspectives of the people that are in the country, the boots on the ground, as we'd say, has been invaluable. It's been a great organization to be a part of.
Well, and what was our last count? Around 50,000 members in 120 countries around the world. That's quite a presence when you think that our membership is primarily made up of security practitioners, law enforcement, military, this sort of thing. Professionals are already vetted within the industry. That's a tremendous force when it comes to force multiplying and getting information out there. So I'd have to agree with you that the networking potential of this organization is incredible. And there's also one organization, one unit within IBSSA that I'd like to recognize on this show, and that's the IBSSA Anti-Human Trafficking Bureau in Serbia. The bureau chief there is a gentleman named Zeljko Gajic. He runs the operation there. And speaking to him a couple of weeks ago, I understand that his bureau is going to be expanding in a few different locations throughout Europe. And I will tell you, they have been a wealth of information for us here in the United States because they operate in that Balkan corridor, which is notorious for human trafficking in that area there. So they're doing a heck of a job. They have a very big social media presence. Anybody interested in looking it up, just put IBSSA Anti-Human Trafficking Bureau Serbia, and their information pops right up. So Zeljko and the team over there, I wish you continued success and keep up the good work. By the way, this month, Jonathan, January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. The FBI seems to be leading the PR campaign behind this. But there's never too much awareness when it comes to human slavery and human trafficking around the world.
So true.
Jonathan,
so true.
Yeah, let me ask you. You guys do a lot of training as well, and how has that been received there in Indiana? I know a lot of our listeners are trainers, are instructors within the protective services industry. How's the training environment up there in Indiana?
For the public in general, it's pretty well received. Everybody around here has really been trying to have a state of mind of being prepared and wanting their situational awareness to be amped up. And so the training's been really, really well received. Teaching people to defend themselves has been a big deal around here. I do wish personally that our local law enforcement departments would reach out to the private sector for training. I think that what you've got there going in the Charlotte area has been a tremendous success in training law enforcement and how proactive they are to learn new skills. And I wish that would transfer to other areas across the United States, not just here locally, but everywhere, because it really helps them not just learn executive protection, but it helps them in their everyday lives as law enforcement officers. It increases everything that they've already been trained to do.
Jonathan, I'm sorry.
I do wish that it would transfer more to law enforcement, but the climate around here for churches, schools, and just the public in general has been pretty receptive.
You know, Jonathan, you're right. We've been very, very fortunate here in the Charlotte, North Carolina area where KDI is based out of, that we've been able to integrate with the law enforcement community so much, that private-public partnership that you hear everybody talk about, and being able to provide training for the law enforcement community. As you know, over the last 9 years, we have conducted a international executive protection course, both for law enforcement and private sector, and getting both those elements in the same room for 7 days just produces some amazing networking opportunities and networking results. It's recently that last year that we have teamed up with Central Piedmont Community College and South Piedmont Community College here in the Charlotte area to provide expanded training for law enforcement, primarily in the area of executive protection. But this year, Jonathan, I don't think I've shared this with you. This year, we're actually on the books at Central Piedmont Community College to provide, in addition to an executive protection course, 7-day executive protection course, to also provide a 2-day surveillance detection course and then a 2-day tactical emergency casualty care, or TECC, course at the first part of this year as well. So we've been very fortunate that the training scope has really caught on within the private sector, private-public partnership here in the Charlotte area. And you know, anything that we can do to help help inspire that up in the Indiana area, you know, we're definitely in tune to get others on board, you know, with that. But I'm glad to hear the training is going well up there. I understand your cadre is also NRA certified firearms instructors also, right?
Yeah. So all of the instructors are NRA certified firearms instructors. I run them through specialized instruction for firearms and different things. I customize every session depending on the environment that the people need to be trained in, whether it's their corporate offices or their church or whatever it might be. It's all customized to their setting. So we like to be very diverse in how we train them and look at their situations and customize the training course according to how they're going to operate in a real-world scenario.
And you've also had some great success, from what I understand, training women in self-defense and in firearms. Tell us a little bit about some of those unique programs that you've done.
Yeah, I mean, women have been very receptive. They've been very conscious of what is happening in the world and learning from it and seeing the need to advance themselves in protecting and being proactive for their own security and the security of their families and their homes. I think in a good way, gone are the ways where, okay, the man is supposed to protect me. If now the women are coming on board saying that I can do this myself, and they're becoming very empowered, and they make for excellent students, I must say. Learning it, instructing women and instructing men. Men have been great. They're good. They're kind of been the bread and butter, but men come to training classes with some, you know, different ideas, you know, bad habits, I guess.
Pre-existing biases sometimes. Huh?
Yes. So with the ladies, they're very just open-minded. They're like sponges. They make for great students. And therefore, if you can teach them properly right from the beginning and create that foundation for them, they're not going to have those bad habits. So we've had women's only classes. We all have other female instructors come in as well to assist in that. It kind of makes them feel more comfortable. And we outline the whole thing, and we do that through our training division with Native Executive Security.
Now, Jonathan, tell me how our audience can get in touch with you, anybody that's up there in the Indianapolis area, through social media and by phone. Give us that information.
Yeah, social media, Native Executive Security on Facebook. Also, our phone number is 317-776-0637, or they can go online to our website at nativeexecutivesecurity.com.
Hey, give us that phone number one more time.
317-776-0637.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the premiere episode of the Protector's Hour. I'm your host, Carl Delaguerra, founder and CEO of KDI and KDI Protective Services here in the Carolinas. We have with us today Mr. Jonathan Wallace, the owner of Native Executive Security out of Indianapolis, Indiana. He's been talking about his national and international adventures in the protective services industry. Jonathan, tell me how you got involved in protective services 17 years ago to begin with.
Well, I guess I would have to say, you know, 17 years ago, that's when I officially got involved in the protection industry. It kind of came out from my background as a young man. My family moved to Central Africa, the DRC, formerly known as Zaire. I moved there when I was about 12 years old, and it was a war zone. The current dictator was being overthrown by the rebels, and the very day we moved into the city, the rebels moved in as well. And the rebel lined up 25 men and 25 women in the city square, and he cut off the left arm of every man and the left breast of every woman and made people in the city file past it just as a sign of dominance. We moved there initially because my father was in charge of over 2,500 churches through Central Africa, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and the DRC. And after the rebels took over the country, they started targeting members of the church, the leadership of the church. And so very quickly, childhood ended, and it became not just about protecting ourselves and our families and our homes, but also protecting members of the church as well. And so from a young age, I really knew it was more of a calling to be in this industry. It was what I was meant to do. So from a young age, I started going to a lot of different training academies, ESI, Executive Security International out of Colorado, and building my resume, basically. BSR, driving school. I did workshops with the Israeli military, the IDF. And I went to flight school, several different training academies for flight school, rotorcraft and fixed wing. And
I understand you're currently a pilot also, right?
Yes.
For rotary and fixed wing as well.
Yes. Rotorcraft and fixed wing. I've been flying for about 20 years now. And it's just, I'm a perpetual student. You know, you constantly have to learn the craft. You have to, you know, even going through what KDI has to offer, and you know, it's been really good, and I want to continue to educate. Even though I've been doing this a long time, I still have to just continually educate myself and stay fresh being a current operator. And I think you completely understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, certainly. I mean, you occupy a rare space within this industry where you have one foot in training and one foot in actual real-world operations. That's a very unique space to operate here. You're bringing firsthand experience to the desks of your students, it sounds like.
That's what I try to do. So everything I've learned, and I continue to learn, every class that I attend, every class that I teach, I learn something new. You can always pick something out, and it just increases your knowledge and what you can provide to the next class.
Sure, no,
you know,
absolutely. There's been quite a few years that. And how much time would you say that you spent over that 17 years? How much time have you spent overseas out of that?
I would say overseas out of that 17 years, I'd probably say at least 8 or 9 of those years have been overseas.
And like you said, you have operational experience not only in South Africa, but also in Cyprus, in Israel, and a variety of places within that region of the world.
That's true, yes.
But there's no place like home, is there?
True.
I can say that as a seasoned traveler myself.
Yeah, and you know, there's no place like home. And
very, very true. You know, talking about international operations, I'm sure you heard about this 13-year-old boy that was murdered down on the Texas border. The family got ambushed on the Mexican side of the Rio Grande, right across from Falcon Heights, Texas. The vehicle was approached. The family came under fire, and their 13-year-old son, Americans, the 13-year-old son was killed. Crazy times right now in Mexico, but interestingly, they're seeing some of the largest number of tourism, and number one tourist supplier is the United States going down into Mexico. What are your thoughts about travel in Mexico?
Boy, that's a difficult question, because you're right. I mean, there's been a significant increase in the travel down there for tourism. But at the same time, I think that the cartels, the gangs that are operational down there, see it as a target-rich environment. I mean, there are constantly stories coming out of Mexico of human trafficking, of holding people for ransom, kidnapping, shootings, just like with this 13-year-old. And that's kind of on top of what happened a couple of months ago with the other family was caught in a crossfire between the Gulf cartel and the Las Zetas down there. So me personally, I would say that it's unsafe, because even though there's a record number of tourism activity, there's also a record number of legal activity aimed towards Americans.
sure. You know, I had the opportunity last year. I went down on business three times down into Mexico, a couple of times in Mexico City, and then down into the Cancun, the Yucatan Peninsula area. And everybody that I spoke to, all the security practitioners, all of our colleagues in Mexico, all say that the border area, the northern border area of Mexico, is completely owned by the cartels. That's where they own that area up there. And it's a little bit different when you get into other areas of Mexico, but vigilance is the key. I don't know anybody down there that will tell you, oh, it's completely safe to be down here. There is always that element of concern. But, you know, it's very interesting. Like any country or any country that's near conflict, life goes on. There's people that live down there. There's businesses. There's families. And I think that that Americans continue to go down to like the big tourist areas, Cancun and things like that, because it is such an attraction down there. And the government has done a good PR job, if you will, to give that sense of security. I saw a statistic last week that said we had more Americans killed in Mexico than we have collectively in all other foreign countries in the world. I think the number was around 73 Americans killed last year in the country of Mexico. It's really, if you look at statistically, it's a staggering number, you know, looking at it globally. But it continues to be a very popular tourist destination out there for many, many people. I personally don't find comfort in going to a place that I have to watch my back. But God bless the protectors that are down there. They are at it every single day. In one of our shows later on this year, I hope to have a good friend and colleague of ours, Pablo Ortiz Monasterio, who runs AS3 security driving in Mexico City. Hope to have him on the show to talk firsthand about what it's like down there in Mexico, because that's definitely one of the hot spots of security concerns around the world right now. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the premiere edition of the Protectors Hour. I'm your host, Carl De La Guerra. This is going to be a weekly one-hour show on Blog Talk Radio, where we talk about anything to do with the protective services industry. One of the things I promised our listeners is that we would feature a book or a periodical or some sort of written material each week. And, you know, I am going to defer to a tried and true document or tried and true book manual, if you will, that is throughout the protective services industry. And everyone is familiar with this, but it definitely deserves mention. And that's the Executive Protection Specialist Handbook by Jerry Glazebrook and Nick Nicholson. Jerry is a former member of Henry Kissinger's protective detail. And this little book, it's on its second printing edition right now. But this little book, I have gone through, I think I'm on my seventh copy of it now, because it gets worn out, because I have it with me continuously when I'm operating. This is such a unique little spiral notebook. It's expanded now in its second edition to include such things as risk assessment, crisis management, WMD response, that sort of thing. But it's a little 4x6 spiral notebook. Goes great into a suit pocket, goes great into a BDU pants pocket, this sort of thing. And one of the unique things about this book is it's not chronological. It's actually based on event. We're going to an airport. I want to refresh myself on airport security, open up the page, go through that checklist there. And so many of you that have gone through our training with KDI know that I am a huge proponent of checklists, 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 checklists. So, Jonathan, you're a pilot. After all these years of flying, does the FAA still require to use a checklist when you're ramping up flight?
Absolutely does. Everything you do.
Because Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're responsible for lives, just like we're responsible for lives in the protective services world. So this book called The Executive Protection Specialist Handbook, you can go on to Amazon or anywhere to look for it. The great folks that I do business with down at Thomas Investigative Publications out of Austin, Texas, that's where I order these from. You can order them online and have it to you in a few days. I recommend this for every single individual that works in the protective services industry. If you work executive protection, dignitary protection, you need to have this book on you. You need to have this thing handy. There's nothing else like it. It retails at $39.95, vinyl cover, spiral bound, 130 pages. It's the best $39.95 investment that, that you would be able to make for working in our industry. Look at it, check it out. If you haven't, if you don't have one, please reach out there and get it. Jonathan, going into 2020, a new year, some new sights on things. What does the future hold for Native Executive Security?
You know, I think that 2020 is going to be a great year for the protection industry. Myself, I think that everybody's vigilance is increasing, and when that happens, people know and see what their weaknesses are. And so I think the training aspect is going to be accelerated tremendously here locally, and I think all over the United States. I think it's going to be a very widening trend. So I think that training is going to be the order of the day for 2020. I do think that corporations are going to start seeing their weaknesses. And just like the people, they're going to want to have their consulting done by professionals in the industry, and they're going to want to hire on new protection agents and get them trained up. So I think that the consulting and I think the training is going to be paramount in 2020. That's my personal perspective.
Where do you see the future of church security going?
Myself, I think that it will still be made up of volunteer members of the church, because, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because the volunteer members, at least the majority of the ones that I've interacted with and trained, they are very, very dedicated, and they're very loyal because they believe that it is a calling. So when you have an individual that has a vested interest in protecting the parish or the people in the church, it goes a long way, and they'll stop at nothing to make sure that they are prepared, stop at nothing to make sure that their family is, their church family is defended. So I think we're going to see a large uptick in training, but I do still think that it will be primarily made up of volunteer church, volunteer members of the church, unless, of course, they're a mega church and they have the sort of financial resources to hire on actual security personnel.
Certainly, and your footprint in South Africa is still quite prevalent with what you do with outfitting, safaris, the security over there related to your business. Any input about where that's going to be headed? What the climate's going to be like there in South Africa for your business in 2020?
Well, people still go, and kind of the mindset of what you mentioned about Mexico, how life still goes on. I think that I think it's going to continue. I do think that the climate will I don't know that it will get better right now, but there are people in the country, members in parliament there, that are real idealists, and they're pushing for a change. And I really think that a lot of their ideals are grabbing hold to the public in general. And so I think it might get darkest before the light, that old adage, but I do think the light is going to come, and I think that I'll still be there. I'll get through the darkness, and I think that when the light comes, I'll be there.
Fantastic. You've already been there how many years now in South Africa, as far as a business is concerned?
As far as business is concerned, well, ever since I really started, so I would say I've been doing – about 15 years. I've lived in South Africa for about 20, but actually conducting business about 15.
That's absolutely fascinating. Ladies and gentlemen, we have had the opportunity this hour to speak with Mr. Jonathan Wallace, the owner of Native Executive Security out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Definitely a world traveler and a true international executive protection specialist, having worked in South Africa and Israel and down in the Mediterranean, in Cyprus and such. Jonathan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. And best of luck with what you have going on with Native Executive Security.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me on, and I really appreciate everything you do for this industry. And I believe you're one of the main leaders in this industry and a true mentor for anybody wanting to get involved in the protection industry. So really appreciate all you bring to the executive protection industry.
Well, Jonathan, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, and thank you for all the support that you've given us over the years, and continue with safety and security within your neck of the woods as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Protector's Hour. I'm your host, Carl De La Guerra, founder and CEO of KDI Protective Services of South Carolina, headquartered in North Carolina, we are looking toward a very, very prosperous 2020. I would have to agree with what Jonathan said. Training is at the forefront of what folks are looking for this year. I believe that church security will do nothing but expand throughout America as these wake-up calls continue. A lot of very, very brave volunteer security teams out there with churches and such. So it looks like a very, very promising year. Everyone out there, please keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, be vigilant. Remember that you are your own protector. There is only so much law enforcement can do within the very first moments of an event happening to you, a criminal incident happening to you. You have to be willing to accept responsibility for your own safety and security. Please be safe. Be careful, and look for the prompt on Facebook of next week's show. I should have it up there in a little while for everybody to see what we have planned for next week's show. And remember that this episode here archives at about 20 minutes from now. It will be on the Blog Talk website, blogtalkradio.com/ Protector's Hour is how they have it listed. Folks, it's been an absolute pleasure bringing you this premiere episode of the Protector's Hour. I'm Carl De La Guerra, and with that, we'll bid you a good day. Chat next week. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.